Hello, everybody. My name is Jamie Adams.
And my name is Oliver Kinner.
I'm Ian McAllister. I'm delighted to report that Brainwaves is now whole 6 years old. We've been away for a little bit longer than we usually are between casts, but we passed the six-year mark recently. And we'd just like to thank all our listeners for their continued patronage and support and sharing the cast and just being there for us over the last few years. It's been incredibly lovely to have you all with us along for the ride, for reporting all the bits and pieces of news to you. Thank you so, so much.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Thanks, Oliver.
Now, that was the past. Looking forward to the future, or indeed the present. This is Brainwaves episode 140, bringing you the best in tabletop gaming news. These are the headlines for the week of the 15th of April, 2024. Golden Bell returns, and they are still awful. Hasbro CEO Chris Cox on a year of controversy. And Magic the Gathering art plagiarism. Again. All this and more on this episode of Brainwaves.
Yes, for a lovely treat for our sixth year anniversary is the Golden Bell are back in the news. Now, back in episode 110, which went out in November of 2022, we reported that artist Alex Norris was being sued by a company that wanted to publish a game based on their comics. The artist said that they were basically being sued for all their intellectual property by an unnamed publisher that Alex had allowed to make games based on their comic. Now, you may be familiar with Alex's work, which is called Webcomic Name. These are three-panel comics where the punchline is always one of the characters saying, "Oh no." Alex has started a crowdfunder to fight the 2022 lawsuit, and the last update from Alex on that lawsuit was in October of 2023, until now. Alex has been sued again by the same publisher, and at the time of the original lawsuit, it was published quite widely amongst the sort of board game media that the publisher was the notorious Golden Bell. For those not familiar with Golden Bell, they practically have their own segment on Brainwaves. They are a publisher who has repeatedly been responsible for late Kickstarter campaigns, most famously with the game Unbroken. Golden Bell has multiple late and failed projects under its belt, and if you are ever approached by Golden Bell to publish your game designers, run very, very fast in the other direction. Alex posted on their GoFundMe on the 24th of March. They started like this.
"They have launched a second lawsuit against me. The case that began in 2019 is mostly over, and I've basically won. I wish it was as simple as leaving it there and walking away. But this new case is taking up even more of my life and unfairly forcing me to spend more and more in legal fees. This means I'm having to reopen this fundraiser to get out of debt with my legal fees yet again. If this was intended to wear me down even further, I won't let it. The end is in sight, despite their ridiculous conduct and attempts to complicate things."
Alex goes on to thank everyone for their support so far and explains that they were hoping to fund this new lawsuit out of their own pocket using income from their comics and online shop. Alex has found this untenable, so is asking for more help. The initial lawsuit saw Alex asking for £250,000, which was achieved. This new fight has meant Alex has raised the target to $430,000, or around £340,000. The GoFundMe sits at £323,267 as of recording on Friday, the 12th of April, 2024. We are providing a link to a Board Game Geek thread that details some of the many controversies that surround Golden Bell that the publisher has been involved in. And we'd like to thank my friend Keith McLennan for bringing this story to our attention. Now, Golden Bell ranks up there amongst some of the worst companies that we have covered over the 6 years of Brainwaves. No one should have anything to do with them. There is loads of evidence for them being some of the worst folk to publish your game. Every time we've covered them, there has not been a good story associated with this publisher that I am aware of. For you, Jamie?
I think the phrase notorious, or not the phrase, the word notorious should now be applied.
Yeah, I mean, we have used that, and it is the correct word to use. They are absolutely notorious. We hope that Alex comes out of the other side of this. They seem to have done so for the first round, and the judge has ruled partially in their favor, though that initial lawsuit is not closed as we understand it at the moment, but the judge has ruled favorably on various points in that original case. So yeah, if you'd like to chuck Alex a few dollars to fight Golden Bell, then we'll provide links to that in the show notes. Good luck, Alex.
Good luck indeed. Moving on to some news from Hasbro. We reported, I think, on it, wasn't the last episode? Chris Cox, CEO of Hasbro, has also recently been interviewed by a Boston-based site called Here and Now. In the interview, the CEO was asked about the OGL, Open Gaming License, debacle of 2023, whether or not Hasbro is killing their darling by overproducing Magic the Gathering, and speaks to the current and future situation with Dungeons & Dragons. This is an important year for Hasbro as they launch a new version of D&D and face new competition from Critical Role, who have been champions of the 5th edition of the role-playing game. When asked about the layoffs in the run-up to Christmas last year, Cox said,
"We had to make the tough decision to let some people go at the end of last year. That overwhelmingly affected our toy business and kind of like the corporate services that help support it. It did have a smaller impact on our games business, but that was for different reasons inside of toys. It really was around driving this turnaround inside of games. It was more around just kind of changing priorities in a rapidly growing and developing business because games had been a business that's been growing for us for the last 15 years and represents a major investment for us. And we think it's going to be a major grower for us in the future."
Cox goes on to say that games have been growing at mid to high single digits for the last decade, whereas toys have been treading water with growth in low single digits for the last 10 to 20 years. When asked about the OGL scandal at the start of 2023, Cox says,
"We make mistakes. We've had products that haven't done as well. We have made some decisions that we've had in some cases quickly walked back. And I think it's the strength of the game that we're as connected to our community as we are, that we empower our teams to make decisions and to be agile and to learn from them. D&D, it's one of the most open game licenses in the history of gaming. It's got a vibrant creator community that we value a great deal. We continue to work with those creators. We continue to work with those small publishers. We continue to work with those streamers to make the game as big as possible and as great of a hobby as well as living for people who kind of create around it as we possibly can."
The interview also touches on Magic the Gathering being Hasbro's first billion-dollar brand and the downgrading of the company's stock after an analyst at Bank of America thought that Hasbro was pushing the brand too hard. He says that the bank actually upgraded their stock to sell after a couple of months and that he is proud of the work they have done expanding the player base and tripling the size of the game. There's an interesting bit about the diversity of the player base. According to Cox,
"Most video games, particularly most kind of more hardcore strategy games, they have maybe 10 or 15% of their player base that identify as non-male. For Magic, it's more like 35% of players identify as non-male. For Dungeons & Dragons, it's closer to 45%. You know, we are very proud of the diversity and the focus on all players of all different stripes who can play the game."
Now, there's obviously a lot of positive spin in this, what Chris is saying, but we would like to remind listeners that amongst the people fired in the run-up to Christmas last year were several of the team behind the Universes Beyond sets for Magic the Gathering, which has proved immensely successful. So yes, obviously, here's the CEO trying to sort of maybe drown out the bad news that Hasbro's had in the past and trying to, as I say, make it sound like it's all dandy and all working really well.
Yeah, it's, but, PR, it's PR damage control for the CEO. It sounds like corporate speak from, you know, all sides.
Yeah.
So I'd agree. I mean, I think the diversity stats are kind of interesting. If correct, that'd be worth looking into a little bit. That is quite interesting. But yeah, there's a lot of damage control going on in there. Obviously, like we say, there is a big year for Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast because Dungeons & Dragons on D&D or 6th edition or whatever you want to call it is coming. Probably around Gen Con that release will be, and the full thing isn't getting released this year, so who knows what happens then. But yeah, it's going to be a big year for the company certainly, and they certainly seem to keep continuing to push Magic Gathering, which is doing extremely well.
Absolutely. I just, back on the diversity stats, I find it interesting that I talk about identifying as non-male.
Yeah.
As if that is a specific gender you can assign yourself or identify as, rather than saying non-binary, female, or whatever. So,
yeah, it's a slight old way of putting it. I mean, I guess they're trying to say the hobby, their part of the hobby, isn't as dominated by middle-aged white guys like ourselves as much as it used to be.
Yeah, but I think that could have been based.
How dare you call me middle-aged?
Okay, young'un. I'm middle-aged, close to.
I'm old,
technically.
So okay.
Technically. Anyway, but we're not quite done with Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast just yet.
Back in episode 134, we reported on the claims that a piece of art in Magic the Gathering had been created by effectively copying another artist's work. That case involved the card Wayfarer's Bauble, and the artist in question, David Sondert, apologised for what had happened, and Wizards of the Coast cut ties with them. Now Magic is back in the news for almost the same reason. Artist Donato Giancola took to Facebook on the 26th of March to claim that art in the card Trouble in Pairs from the recent Murder at Karlov Manor Commander decks stole art from his work on the front cover of a 2020 cyberpunk novel. Donato wrote,
"Wow, nearly speechless, but not speechless enough not to contact a lawyer. Copyright infringement. What were you thinking, Wizards of the Coast? To be clear, there are exacting details in the neck, arms, background, and hand which show clear copied structures from my art. Copied and pasted. This is not about similarities. This is about direct copying."
Donato shared the image of the card beside the cover they had drawn. And the similarities are, well, they're quite uncanny. Now, when the allegation was made in the Magic TCG subreddit, Wizards of the Coast replied, saying,
"We appreciate our community flagging concerns on the card art featured in Trouble in Pairs. We're looking into it."
There were claims that other parts of Trouble in Pairs were copied from different sources, but this has not been possible to verify at this time. Now, it's very possible this plagiarism is quite similar to what we saw from David Sondert, where another image was effectively painted over, with the, you know, tight timescales, smaller team sizes. It's sadly not surprising this is happening. Wizards seems to be putting their artists under immense pressure, leading some to cut corners in less than ethical fashions. But I'm also drawn to mind, if you allow me to be slightly highbrow for a second, the satirist Tom Lehrer, who recently turned 96, who said, "I always found it interesting. There are people who regard copyright infringement as a form of flattery." It's like, what are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing, Wizards of the Coast?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about AI art as well before now in various things, and Wizards obviously came under problems with that with the art in Big E Presents Glory of the Giants, which was last year, if I remember correctly, and sort of artists using AI in there. And this stuff is like reappeal or really sensitive to this stuff at the moment. To my eye, I've had a look at both pieces of art and read a lot of the posts about it. It is very much direct copying, but to my eye, Donato says, it's basically, it looks like a flip of one of their characters on the front of this cover, including like shading and shadows and things like that on the musculature down to that degree, and it looks extremely similar. There's some additions for sure, but yeah, it's very, very similar. And yeah, if you put your staff under that kind of pressure, then that kind of thing is going to happen.
And there's always the thing with using something as a reference and actually copying. So, I don't think the excuse of using something as a reference probably applies here.
Moving on to some updates.
Over the last half year, we've been bringing you news about the Embracer Group, the Swedish company that bought Asmodee alongside several computer game studios. Embracer has been going through a massive restructuring due to missing out on a deal with a Saudi investment fund to the tune of $2 billion. It seems that Embracer had banked on that money to prop up their buying spree across the digital and tabletop gaming space. Now, as we reported back in December of last year in episode 134, restructuring had started at Asmodee as part of this company-wide move. Lars Winkelfors, the CEO of Embracer Group, said recently that
Asmodee is one of the absolute most important businesses we have within the group, and I'm very keen to support them.
Last year, Asmodee outperformed the PC and console games divisions of Embracer for net sales. Winkelfors said that he has been approached by parties interested in buying Asmodee, but the company is not for sale. Recent figures released at the end of the restructuring process revealed that the headcount at Asmodee had fallen by 82 to 2,500 people. The same can't be said for the computer game portfolio of Embracer, which has shed about 1,400 people and shuttered major studios across its portfolio. And now, a little bit of disclosure here, Oliver has undertaken paid demonstrator work for Asmodee at UK Games Expo.
But they won't hold me back commenting on this story, I think.
Oh, no, indeed. I mean, it's great that the restructuring Asmodee has basically meant effectively nothing Like a headcount of reducing out by 82 out of a workforce of over 2,500 feels like sort of just natural people loss of a company that size to me rather than restructuring. Obviously, the company is making money and a lot of the other parts of Embracer are not, according to Embracer, that is. But we can't ignore the fact that they bought very quickly a large number of studios and things like license to Lord of the Rings, and then immediately had to sort of backtrack on all those sort of buying spree because of this missed deal with the Saudi investment fund. And a lot of people have lost their jobs right across the computer games industry.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I mean, these 82 people, we don't want to trivialize that. If they have been told to leave, if they've been fired, then obviously that is different. But it's not clear from here. It more sounds like just headcount had reduced, not necessarily that people have been made redundant or anything. But yeah, either way, it's certainly a smaller number compared to the number of people who were let go from these computer game computer game portfolio.
And more widely, Embracer has said their restructuring is now finished, so maybe we'll stop seeing the shuttering of so many studios, but still.
I doubt it.
I completely
doubt it. Sorry for being too cynical, but this year and the end of last year, we have seen so many people getting fired in the video game industry, so many studios being shut down, and it's only April.
Yeah, it's been slash and burn across the digital gaming sector. It's been very, very painful to watch.
As always, we hope that obviously these people who've lost their job have found somewhere else.
I really hope so.
Now, on to the main news.
I'm once again reaching back to episode 134. So back in episode 134, we also reported on Hasbro's inaugural Women Innovators of Play Challenge. Now we're pleased to say that one of the winners, board game designer and owner of The Dark Imp, Ellie Dix, has visited Hasbro's headquarters in Rhode Island for a day in the life experience and a mentorship session with one of Hasbro's top women leaders. Additionally, work has started on developing the family card game that Ellie submitted for the 2023 contest. Kim Boyd, president of global brands and franchise management at Hasbro, says that,
"As a true testament to the power of women inventors everywhere, Hasbro is thrilled to be investing in an incredible game by one of the challenge's winning inventors, Ellie Dix, and we will be partnering with Ellie to further develop her game concept."
For the 2023 challenge, Hasbro received 130 submissions, and the company is going to continue the challenge this year, starting on October the 10th. Kim Boyd, Hasbro's president of global brands and franchise management, said,
"We are on a mission to attract more women and girls to the toy and game industry, and I could not be more inspired by the response to our Women Innovators of Play event and challenge."
It is not known at this time what prize money will be up for grabs, but last year saw three winners take home $10,000 and gain mentorship from women business leaders within Hasbro. A separate Girl Innovators of Play boot camp will be offered alongside the Girl Up organization. Girl Up is dedicated to giving girls opportunities to pursue leadership roles around the world. From the organization's website,
"The world needs new solutions and leadership now. Girl Up is expanding girls' skills, rights, and opportunities to lead. We're changing the face of leadership for generations to come."
Now, thank you very much to Chris Briscott from our Discord for drawing our attention to this story. I can't speak for these two. I'm going to speak for myself. This is a really good initiative. However, let's not have, women in leadership roles just because they're women. Like, just because for diversity, because they are incredibly skilled.
Yeah, because, and also, let's not ignore the nasty things Hasbro have done because of the good stuff. But
Don't.
We don't need to celebrate the good stuff that these companies do, at least. But we don't let them like sort of ethic wash their sort of profile with this kind of thing.
You got to take the rough with the smooth.
But yeah, just congratulating Ellie Dix again for winning this.
Indeed.
Very much deserved. Ellie. And it's great. Yeah, great to see. As I say, that this sort of initiative is around. But yeah, see you above for other Hasbro news. In other news, a press release dated 5th of April 2024, US publisher Capstone Games LLC and German publisher Spielwerks GmbH have announced a partnership to bring all of Spielwerks titles to North America. Capstone Games, based in Cincinnati, is known for modern board games that feature rich, evolving gameplay, including Wandering Towers and Ark Nova. Spielwerks, an independent games publisher from Germany, publishes well-known games such as Die Macher and Colonialism, and also localizes games from around the world into German. The two companies have partnered in the past, including on games such as Arkwright and Weimar, the Fight for Democracy. Under the new agreement, Capstone will make Raising Chicago by Matt Wolff available for pre-order sometime in April. Epos, a Gentis game by Stefan Risthaus, will come to crowdfunding in June, and Dolcissima Vita by Gianciome Migioni will be available to pre-order in July. Clay Ross, owner of Capstone Games, and Uli Blennemann, CEO of Spielwerks, are clearly very happy about the partnership. Blennemann says,
"I'm very excited to work with longtime friend Clay. Capstone Games ensures that all Spielwerks games will be available to a wider audience in the United States and Canada. Capstone is well anchored in the distribution network and has strong direct sales."
Ross adds,
"The very first Capstone title, Arkwright, was done in partnership with Spielwerks and with my good friend Uli. When I started Capstone, our focus was on heavy strategy games and the rich gameplay they provide. Now, with our partnership with Spielwerks, we are able to offer even more games that fit this playstyle, true to the original foundations of Capstone. We are very excited to bring the finely crafted Spielwerks designs to a wider audience in North America."
Thanks to Sarah Reed from our Discord for bringing us this story. And for full disclosure, I just want to say that I've taken paid contractual work with Spielwerks, so just bear that in mind.
Are we allowed to know what kind of contractual work you've done?
Am I allowed to say that?
I don't know.
Well, I'm allowed to.
I don't know what your contract says.
Are you allowing me to share this as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so I've been translating Epos, a Gentis game, into English from German, so lovely. That's what I'm working on at the moment.
Also, this is just a small thing, and this is mainly due to us, our writing of it. I know, so Spielwerks, and Capstone Games is based in Cincinnati in Ohio in America. Where in Germany is Spielwerks based?
Münsterland, which is sort of western Germany.
Cool, thank you.
Yeah.
Just a little thing just in my brain that just went, Germany's a big place.
Yeah, and we just say Cincinnati specifically, yeah.
It's from Germany, whereas Capstone Games specifically from Cincinnati, Ohio. I know that's not relevant to the story, but, you know.
And just to be clear, it's the sort of thing we would be covering regardless of Oliver's association with Spielwerks or not, because it's two big companies coming together to push new games out into a new territory. So it's definitely the sort of thing we generally cover on Brainwaves.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're probably a good fit as well, both.
Yeah.
Do make similar sort of games and help each other. And yeah, why not? Why not have another company distribute your games in another area, another market?
Capstone Games did Watergate, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Yep.
This is just a thing for me going, I love Watergate.
It's great.
Hey, it's so
never played it, but I want to. So.
Oh, Oliver, we got to play
one day.
It sometime.
It's
like Twilight Struggle. In it's that kind of two-player card-driven thing, but it's just such a really tight game.
So tight. And Jamie gets to do his Nixon impression a lot.
I don't.
We'll have to play it at UKG then.
Well, I'm not going to be at UK Games Expo.
Come on, Jamie. Yeah,
I know. I'll give Ian my copy so you two can play it.
But we're not going to hear your impression, so how's that going to work?
I'll record it and I can play it for you.
Okay.
Just do a little soundboard of me doing impressions. And if you're listening going, Jamie, I want to hear your Nixon impression. No, because it's not very
Jamie,
good.
Jamie, there's still a room share available, so do make it happen. Come on.
No, I need to double check. Like, I'm finishing my tour shortly before that, but I need to double check my finances after that.
Speaking of events, jobs, and opportunities, Ian.
Yes, indeed. Nothing extra for you this week, folks, but we'd just like to remind you that the Facebook group Tabletop Jobs exists, and you can find various sort of opportunities across the world on that group. We'd also like to take this opportunity to give a little shout out to our patrons, especially as we have just passed, as we said at the top, our six-year mark. The help of our patrons make sure that we can fund the website and the cast, and we're really, really grateful for all your support. Especially to our executive producers, Ken Bertram, James Naylor, and Sean Newman. We'll put links to all their bits and pieces in the show notes. Our patron, if you'd like to join up,
alongside them is at patreon.com/thegiantbrain. You can join up for just $1 a month, and it'll give you access to some extra little bits and pieces that we write on the site. You can also join our Patreon for free, where I do some extra sort of like free sort of short bits of writing that I dump up on the site. It's totally free to join, and you'll just get notified of those pieces as they come out, which include things like sort of monthly summaries of all the things I played, and sort of summaries of all the writing or videos or podcasts I've been enjoying in the tabletop gaming space. And there's various other ways to support us on the site, and we'll put links to those in the show notes as well. Jamie, you've come up with some Monopoly news, but first, you're scouting out other opportunities?
Oh, very good, very good. Yeah, I believe 117 years old, I think.
I am not.
Yeah, I think they are. Okay, it was 1907 they started. Yeah, at 117 years old this year, the Scouts have had many games associated with them. In the past few years, Monopoly, Warhammer, and Dungeons & Dragons are probably the ones that are most associated with this podcast anyway that we'll talk about. But we now have another. Oh yes, in Cluedo Scouts, the scout leader received a letter saying a passing scout patrol had saved someone while lost in the wilderness. The letter, however, didn't say which patrol it was, where it was, or what equipment was used to assist them. So in locales such as the campsite, the marshes, or the farm, players will be a scout patrol and suggest equipment such as a torch, a compass, a bottle of water, and a few others. I mean, it's Cluedo. But the Scout Association, you know.
So an American version is going to be Clue Boy Scouts of America or something.
Yes, which is an interesting thing. And I will bring up, which I've occasionally said, that I was an assistant scout leader for several years. And yes, the Scout Association and the BSA, which are the Boy Scouts of America, are two separate organizations, but they're still the overall umbrella thing of the Scouts.
The Scouts, yeah.
In the same way that I believe there is several different Scouts in Germany. There's quite a number of different Scout groups in Denmark, where we were a couple of years ago, and same for places like Sweden. So, yeah, there is the Scouts, but there's also country-specific ones. Sorry.
And most importantly, don't confuse the Scout with the Scot. They're two different things. But they could be.
Well, that's true, unless you get Scot Scouts.
Exactly.
And also, the first ever, and also, a little bit of trivia for you, the first ever Scout group registered was a Scottish Scout group, which was the first Glasgow, which was down the road from where, which is down the road from where I grew up.
There we go.
Now, moving on to what you really want to hear. Want to hear the Monopoly news, yeah. So, before we go on to that, I need to talk about Lucky Chap. Lucky Chap is a film production company from Margot Robbie, star of such films as I, Tonya, Suicide Squad, both of them, and recently, the very successful Barbie. Now, Lucky Chap has stepped on board to produce a film based on the legendary board game, the cultural juggernaut, Monopoly, alongside Hasbro Entertainment, a facet of Daddy Hasbro. Now, rumours about a Monopoly film have been flying about for, well over a decade, and we've covered several of these on the podcast over the years.
I'm pretty sure we covered when the Monopoly was optioned as a film some time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Which
means basically nothing, but basically goes into the sort of like Hollywood structure and someone maybe picks it up at some point.
As I said, we've only been going 6 years, and it's been going at least a decade. So again, these are bits and pieces. I mean, at one point, Kevin James was attached, then that went quiet, and obviously goes back and forth. But yeah, it's coming up again, and it's making a lot of headlines, considering that it's Margot Robbie's production company, and Margot Robbie coming off the back of Barbie, for example.
Yeah.
But Lionsgate Film Company is also involved after buying E1, which was Hasbro's previous entertainment studio. So they're going to be heavily involved, makes sense. Now, as you said, this is just Lucky Chap is stepping on board. We don't know what they're going to do, like apart from producing. No word on the plot, what that might be at this time. Now, it could be a Barbie-esque deconstruction of the setting and a sideways and irreverent, but ultimately heartwarming look at the impact of such a game and its legacy. Or a potential plot suggestion from Richard from We're Not Wizards, Probably going to focus on the theft of the game from the original women designer and how it was originally a critique of the housing and rental market, but was changed by Charles Darrow, who stole it and sold it to Parker Brothers. But that's just a guess, you know. I was going to say, here I was going to do a little bit about Earring Magic Ken, but I realised that was a tangential reference to Barbie, and also Barbie is Mattel, not Hasbro. But Earring Magic Ken was the most successful Ken doll sold, but was pulled very quickly from sales. Have a look online if you want to find out about Earring Magic Ken. He's great. Also, here's hoping it does well, but it's still not going to beat the best board game adaptation film. And that, of course, is Battleship. No, no, it's Cluedo or Clue. This is your regularly scheduled reminder.
Battleship was good, though. Clue. I like Battleship.
It's got Liam Neeson. Yeah.
That doesn't make it good.
No, I know.
But I can also exclusively reveal that if you tune into Call of the Old episode going out this Wednesday, that you will learn much more about this particular game, Monopoly.
Ooh.
I covered it on the new edition of Call of the Old, the new season.
Oh, really?
Way, way, way back. And
so how it was,
including
how
it was, all the background about how it was stolen from Elizabeth Maggie by Charles Darrow. I've done a whole breakdown about that.
Female left-wing feminist and taken by Charles Darrow, a wealthy capitalist.
And if you want to even know even more about that, I suggest you check out a podcast called The Dollop, and it has an episode specifically on the Landlord's Game, as it originally called, and the whole history of how it was stolen. It's a capitalist story about a capitalist game, or what became a capitalist game.
Can I just say, there are people who are saying that Monopoly is actually not a bad game, but it's ruined by a lot of house rules. Has anyone here recently played Monopoly as it's meant to, like,
well,
as it's
meant to be played? Well, if you listen this Wednesday, Jamie, to Cult, you'll hear three people go down that particular rabbit hole.
I've only ever played it by the rules, but there we go.
Yeah.
Fair enough, Oliver.
As they were written in the lid, inside the box lid.
Of course, inside of the lid.
Not a separate sheet of paper or anything like that. Don't be daft. It's in the lid of the box.
That is the most economical. Sorry.
That was very interesting. Thanks very much for all those tidbits of information, Jamie. That was really useful. We learned a lot other than the news. So, yeah, thanks very much for listening, everyone. If you like what you've listened to and if you want more of these really important morsels of knowledge for your next pub quiz, then please share the podcast and drop us a review and rating on your favorite podcast platform of choice. I think Apple Podcasts are still a thing. Spotify, I'm sure there's various places.
Google Podcasts isn't anymore.
Google Podcasts. Oh, okay, there we go. So yeah, wherever you listen to us, please leave some stars and write some amazing review about this amazing podcast.
Preferably, you know, somewhere between, let's say, 4 and 6. Like, right in the middle there would be perfect.
Unless you have the choice of 10 stars, which is possible somewhere. Yeah. You never know.
But then I'd say bump up your choice to maybe between like 9 and 11, somewhere in the middle there.
Are we still in Richard's outro now? But there we go.
Oh, was that Richard Dalton? I didn't realize.
He said, yeah, don't give me 10 stars because that's too much. Don't give me 0 stars or 1 star because it makes you cry. Give me something in the middle, Richard. 5 stars.
If you're listening, Richard. If you're listening, Richard, I did not steal that intentionally.
Anyway, so if you want to follow me, you can go to the tabletopgamesblog.com website, where you find links to all my social media and everything else. You can also find links to our Discord at the bottom of the description for this cast. We're available on Blue Sky as, I'm just waiting for Ian to type this in.
Just search for the Giant Brain on pretty much everywhere, and you'll find us on like Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram. That's what we are.
But not Twitter. You'll find me, but not Ian.
Yeah,
I left Twitter some time ago.
Also, there's the obviously always informative giantbrain.co.uk website with reviews and other bits and pieces, as well as obviously the archive of this podcast. And if you want to get in touch anonymously, or rather not anonymously, maybe in confidence, should I say, email us at giantbrainuk@gmail.com. All the information is taken in confidence. And yeah, let us know. Other than that, thanks very much for listening. Really appreciate it. And happy birthday again. 6 years. Amazing.
Indeed.
Thanks very much for listening,
everyone.
Bye.
It's been another 6 years. Bye.
Yeah, bye.